This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Brett here today. Brett, we are chock full. We're mailing it in today, man.
I always like those days.
We're actually here today. The Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent's going to join us. We're going to talk to her a little bit later on about the beginning of the Senate session here, and Gazelka's comments on the forum call that they had. Sven Sundgaard is going to join us as well. We're going to talk weather with him. BringMeTheNews.com's weather guy. We got the storm coming on through. It's is that a weird mixed bag. Winds out to the west, blizzard kind of to the southwest and south of us. And we kind of are in this weird spot where, I don't know, they seem to be toning it down how much snow we're going to get.
Yeah, well, these winter storms, I mean, there's just narrow bands sometimes where you might luck out and get nothing while next county over.
By the way, Iowa,
it's 12 inches.
Sucks to be you. Jeff Stein's going to let me know about that. Who do you have coming up here at 5:35?
Kevin Featherly, Capitol reporter from Minnesota Lawyer. Follows some really interesting stories at the state capitol that typically don't get covered a lot in some of the other media publications, so we'll follow.
I have told you about having the smart people on. That make me look really stupid. Come on, man.
I'll remember that. I'll get some Republicans on for you then.
This is Mike, my friend. All right. First of all, I want to say thank you to everyone so far that's gotten the calendar. Wow. We got in the hundreds of people have taken the calendar that we have put out here at AM 950 Radio. It is a stunning tribute to my weird ability to take a photo, apparently. It's chock full of great photos. I took this last year on these hikes and walks I did across Minnesota, and they're not only here in the metro, and not only on the southwest side. I live in Hopkins. Sure, there's some Hopkins shots there. Lake Elmo is over there. It was at Afton State Park, right on the border of the river there. Up on the Iron Range, Mesabi Trail, I was there. So, I mean, I was pretty much throughout a good chunk of the metro area and across the state. Pretty pictures. You can go over to AM 950 Radio, go to the membership tab. If you'd still want to get one of the calendars, you can still do that. It's either a $50 one-time donation or a $25 recurring donation. And the money you send us helps keep AM 950 on the air. And trust me, I think we have learned our lesson. We need to have a vibrant variety of voices talking to us every day. So you're helping keep progressive talk on. We are one of the few markets in the entire country that has progressive radio on. Let's keep it that way. So help out if you can. We'll get a calendar, and if we can somehow figure it out, I'll even sign them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do we sell those at a reduced price then?
No, they're got damaged goods. I know. That was good. Nice. I'll even sign it to you like a Rendezvous and Champlin. Oh, baby, oh, when we pulled into the auto repair shop parking lot, oh, baby, baby.
You think with the snowstorm tonight that the streets have to be safe in Champlin. I don't think anyone's going to be going out in the parking lot.
Well, here's what you do. Look for the very inappropriate snow angels. That tells you something's going on in that parking lot. Dear Lord, is that snow angel anatomically correct? Oh, my God!
And we didn't have any photos of Champlin on the calendar, did we?
No, we did not have Champlin, although we might be doing a Champlin calendar next year. That's what we're going to do. I am going to go up to Champlin, and I'm going to start staking out parking lots. We're here at the butcher shop. Oh, speaking of the butcher shop. No, I can't do that joke. Anyway, but that's what we'll do. We'll go around Champlin, wait for people to come into the parking lots to have sex in their cars. I'll take photos, and there we go. Bet you I can get 24 pictures. Champlin, you did it to yourself. Also, by the way, we did want to make sure we mention that we had The other offer that we put out over the holidays was people that if they wanted to put a message out, we were going to do that. Jim and Ellen got their message to us now, so I'm getting it as we read this here. Become a union carpenter or other building trades member. A freaking men. You want a good job that pays, that you have job security, get into the trades. Absolutely. And if you are out there, if you've got someone who's, 17, 18, 19, you're 22, 23 years old, things are, you're trying to figure out what to do. The trade organizations, the unions have training programs, apprenticeship programs. They can get you trained in and you will have work. Trust me, plumbing, electrical, carpentry, masonry work. You will have jobs. So, absolutely. Jim and Ellen are on the right path here. Walk into a living wage job and earn while you learn. Great benefit packages, health care, pensions, and opportunities for advancement. Jim and Alan wanted to make sure you do that. Once again, become a union carpenter or other building trades member. Absolutely. Get yourself a good job and help out. And thank you very much, Jim and Alan. We do appreciate that as well. Once again, to get the calendar, if you want us to say a message, I'll say a message. Go to AM950 Radio, go to the membership page, and find out the details there. 952-946-6205. So Trump has done what we always thought he was going to do when he left the White House. He's stealing crap. Did you hear about this?
He's literally stealing
they got
stuff from the White
House. They got pictures of the Lincoln bust. Now, I had a friend. I'm thinking to myself, okay, if someone gave him a copy. A friend of mine has messaged me and said, that's actually legit. They were on the White House tour like 15 years ago, and the Lincoln bust was there. That's property of the American people. And he's loading it into his moving trucks. And they caught him on camera doing it. Just disturbing. But not as disturbing as Ivanka and Jared. I have tried to tell Trump supporters, this image that you've created of the Trump family as some kind of blue-collar family, that they actually would tolerate you being near them is a facade. Sure, they fly in an airplane. They get whisked over from an airplane to an airport hangar where they get up on a stage and you might be within 20, 30 feet of them, but they're never going to allow you to be anywhere near them. Absolutely not. They do not care about you. I mean, my God, you remember when Ivanka came into town and she went to the Fleet Farm? And it looked as if, she was, here I am, if you're in the Midwest, I went Fleet Farm shopping. She looked so damn uncomfortable, it was not even funny. I mean, it was a photo op, but you could tell, it's like, is this where humans actually shop? I thought this was like a store for dogs. You could tell she was just so unbelievably distant from normalcy. How about I say it like that? Distant from normalcy. Donald Trump, if you, blue-collar guy that's got Donald Trump flags all over your yard, all over your house, you painted Trump on your barn, if you were to show up at a restaurant and you saw him and you went up and then said, hi, I'm a big fan, he would have you wrestled out and thrown out of the restaurant. He would. If you had an emergency and came to his door and said, I really need help, he'd say, I don't care, get away. I don't like you people. You're the heathens. They don't care about you. This is a class of people that works in a realm that they've created a world where they never have to interact with the masses. And he's convinced you that he's one of you. He's one of you. The reality is he's not. He's not even anywhere close. A prime example of that is the following story. The United States Secret Service agents assigned to guard first daughter Ivanka Trump and husband Jared Kushner were forced to use a $3,000 per month rental toilet after the couple barred them from using any of the six bathrooms in their house. Jared and Ivanka have a house with six bathrooms. The Secret Service is there to protect them and keep them safe, and they would not allow the Secret Service to use any of the bathrooms in their place. The Washington Post reports the Secret Service agents were strictly forbidden from using any of the toilets in Jared and Ivanka's house located in the elite Kalorama neighborhood of Washington, D.C. This forced agents to find creative ways to properly relieve themselves. Wow, the begonias are coming in great this year. no. Including trips to former President Barack Obama's house, which is located in the same neighborhood, as well as renting a porta potty. The agents finally found an apartment restroom when the government spent $3,000 a month to rent out the basement studio of one of Jared and Ivanka's neighbors. So far, the government has spent more than $100,000 to rent out the bathroom. $100,000. Because Jared and Ivanka would not allow the Secret Service to use one of their six bathrooms in their house. Unbelievable. The White House spokesperson denied that Trump and Kushner restricted agents from their 5,000-square-foot home and its six bathrooms and 6.5 bathrooms, actually. Six bedrooms, 6.5 bathrooms. So there's even a half a bathroom, which is a sink and a stool. They could have used that. Nope. Asserted that it was the Secret Service decision not to allow the protective detail inside, the Post writes. That account is disputed by a law enforcement official familiar with the situation who said the agents were kept out of, by the family's request. Liar. You guys can't stop lying in the White House. And by the way, once again, Barack Obama, out of the goodness of his heart, allowed these Secret Service agents who are watching Ivanka and Jared to use his house. But there's an ugly side to that as well. The porta potty was the agency's initial solution for the protective details dilemma, but was removed in the face of the neighbors' protest. After that, according to law enforcement officials, the agents began using a bathroom in the garage of the Obama's house, which the former president protective detail had turned out into a command post. The Obamas did not use the garage, so the extra traffic to and from the command post caused no problem. Yet the solution, too, was short-lived after a Secret Service supervisor from the Trump-Kushner detail left an unpleasant mess in the Obama bathroom at some point before the fall of 2017, according to a person briefed on the event. That prompted the leaders of the Obama detail to ban the agents up the street from returning. Everything that family touches turns to absolute crap, doesn't it? Quite literally. Seriously, everything that family touches, I mean, they're stealing the bust. Trump is currently stealing the bust of Lincoln out of the White House. This, guys, they screwed us out of $100,000. If this was a Democrat, if there's a Republican out there saying, this is no big deal, if this was a Democrat, you would be going ballistic right now. If this was Chelsea Clinton, holy God, if this was one of the Obama girls, you would be going nuts. They have 6.5 bathrooms in their house. What kind of entitled people are they? But Ivanka and Jared do it. It's like, well, it's just, feasibly probably couldn't even use all six bathrooms in a single day, but 6.5 bathrooms were actually in a single day. But come on, man. It's just, they don't want to bug their private life. $100,000. Taxpayer dollars we had to rent out because Jared and Ivanka, who weren't even there half the time, couldn't allow a Secret Service agent who would jump in front of a bullet to save either one of those two worthless zygotes' lives, couldn't allow them to use the bathroom. You really think all you fools that have got your 20 Trump flags that scream out, he's one of us, you think they are? Find him. Walk up to him. Try to shake his hand. When your arm is getting yanked out of the socket by a Secret Service agent and you're getting thrown down the stairs for daring to be getting into his personal private space, then ask yourself if he really is one of you. They're not. They never have been. You've been conned. And you just choose to believe the con over reality. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of believing the con, when we do come back, let me read the quotes from the Republican Congress people who voted to not impeach Trump on why they didn't do so. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, Mark, it was one of the many people that posted that story earlier today. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Mark. 952-946-6205. So, yesterday we had a no-brainer of an impeachment. The President of the United States turns a riotous terrorist crowd onto the Capitol, who is looking to kill the Vice President, kill the Speaker of the House, destroy the Capitol, burn it down, kill as many congresspeople as possible, and try to destroy the electoral votes of the last election. So you'd say to yourself, this is pretty much a no-brainer. Quick impeach. Funny story, 197 Republicans voted not to, including all four of the Minnesota Republican delegation. Now, I want to make sure we understand something before I read their just absolutely trash excuses. If this mob would have gotten them, if this mob would have got Jim Hagedorn or Tom Emmer or Michelle Fischbach or Pete Stauber, they would have likely killed them. I want to make sure we understand that. That if this mob would have gotten any of them, their lives definitively would have been in jeopardy. At the very least, there's a decent chance they could have been injured very severely. So I don't know about you. I would say to myself, hey, Mr. President, I know I'm blindly loyal, but what was this about killing me and all the rest of my coworkers? That doesn't seem like it's a good thing. Funny story, it's not. But the excuses come rolling on in. First District Representative Jim the Bag of Soup Hagedorn, instead of looking towards the future and doing the business of the American people, Speaker Pelosi and the Democrats have prosecuted another unwarranted and politically motivated impeachment. This latest effort by House Democrats to impeach Trump is further dividing the already splintered nation and subjecting the... Come on, guys. Why don't you just unify with the white supremacists? Come on! The people that were trying to kill us all, why don't you just, forgive and forget and let them just snuggle in next to you? That's Hagedorn. Democrats have been working to impeach and remove President Trump even before he even took oath of office 4 years ago. Well, that's because he'd committed crimes which prevented him. He should have prevented him from taking the office. Like I said, let's go back to Trump University, the first great – well, I mean, Stormy Daniels really was the first one. Actually, no, he mocked John McCain. Well, no, he mocked a disabled man. Oh, the Access Hollywood. There are so many you could choose from prior to him taking office. We'll just go with Trump University. If it was Clinton University and Hillary Clinton had treated her university students like Trump did, you would spend 4 years marching every student in there telling you, where did Headmaster Clinton touch you on the doll? That's what you would have done. So don't sit there and act as if, A, Trump hadn't already done things. And that was when we first started hearing about the working with Kelly working. Well, who was it? No, it wasn't Kelly. Who was Flynn? Michael Flynn working with the Russians. Don't look at me and say that there wasn't justification to start investigating the guy back then. But fine. They lack credibility on this issue. It's time to move forward as a nation. Once again, Jim Hagedorn, if he was caught by the rioters, would have been killed. That's some serious Stockholm syndrome there. Tom Emmer, no. In 1 week, a peaceful transfer of power will occur. Yeah, that's because we have so much military scattered around the Washington, D.C., because the followers of your political party, Tom, are trying to, trying to kill as many people in Washington, D.C. as possible. So let me go back to Tom's excuse. 1 week, a peaceful transfer of power will occur. It's been a hallmark of our republic. Today's vote only serves to further the division in our country at the time when the country desperately needs to move forward together. You cannot have forgiveness without accountability, Tom Emmer. He voted no on this. And once again, Tom, just want to remind you, if the angry mob that Trump sent to attack you would have captured you, they would have killed you. Seventh District Republican Michelle Fischbach voted no. With fewer than 7 days remaining in this administration, we should be focused on moving forward and getting back to work on behalf of the American people. Once again, Michelle, I will give Michelle Fischbach this. At least she didn't do the bloviated, "You Democrats are just sore losers" crap. She just kind of put out a statement. But still, Michelle, funny story. If they would have caught you, the angry Trump mob of terrorists would have killed you. You do understand that, right? I mean, do you think Michelle Fischbach would have the same mentality if a group of Black Lives Matter protesters stormed her offices and were saying, "Hang Michelle Fischbach, you know, kill Michelle Fischbach"? Do you think she would be sitting there and saying, you know, "With fewer than 7 days remaining in this administration, we'd be focused on moving forward and getting back to work on behalf of the American people"? No, she'd be screaming about, "I'm a victim. I'm a victim. I'm a victim. I'm a victim." That's what Michelle Fischbach would be like. Yeah, this is just, think about this. I mean, there was an angry mob that was trying to kill her. And her loyalty to Trump is more than her own life. I'm paraphrasing just what I said there. "I would have been honored to die at the hands of the angry mob for Trump. I would have been honored." What is wrong with you people? Pete Stauber all of a sudden became a wordsmith. Oh, for God's sakes, let me read this tome. "Like most Americans, I am shocked and outraged over the violent riots that took place in the halls of Congress 1 week ago." Hey! It's almost like Pete Stauber understands the mob was trying to kill him. "I condemn the rioters' actions and believe those individuals must be held accountable to the full extent of the law." Holy God! Wow! Wait a minute. Did Stauber vote to impeach? No. Then he continues, "What happened last Wednesday is a blatant sign that tensions are running high and that the rhetoric on both sides has gotten out of control." Is that what you say? I mean, seriously. So when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor back in 1941, did Pete Stauber's grandfather come on out and said, "Well, clearly tensions are running high on both sides here and the rhetoric has gotten out of control"? Did you do that? I can't believe you would do that. On 9/11, when planes were smashing into buildings, were you sitting there, "Oh, hey, whoa, tensions are running high, the rhetoric on both sides has gotten out of control"? I don't think you did. Go back to the first paragraph you put out there, Pete. "Angry mob trying to kill you." Okay. You would think that, and so that's why I'm voting to impeach him, because he tried to get me killed. End of story. Both sides are out of control. There's that one side who tried to kill me and the other side who saw them trying to kill me. Both sides! "It is imperative that leaders across the nation take this moment to unite our country. Once again, you cannot move past this and unite without accountability, which you need to hold Trump accountable. With that being said, I believe efforts to impeach the president contradict the idea of unity." Jesus. I'm standing with the guy who tried to kill me. "President Trump has just a few days left in his presidency, and he's promised a peaceful transfer of power." Yeah, 7 days out, he tried to, 14 days out, he tried to run a riot into the Capitol and kill you. But hey, that was 2 weeks ago. Come on, man. That was two whole weeks ago. I mean, that's like two episodes of The Mandalorian. Come on, man. Things change a lot on a show after 2 weeks. There you go. The cowards that are Jim Hagedorn, Tom Emmer, Michelle Fischbach, and Pete Stauber. Freaking cowards. Yes, sir, may I have another? When we do return, the minority leader for the Minnesota Senate is going to be kind enough to join us, Senator Susan Kent. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
AM
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Coming up a little bit later on, Sven Sundgaard is going to be joining us. BringMeTheNews.com's weather extraordinaire. We'll talk about the snowstorm coming on through. But joining us once again is the Senate Minority Leader, Senator Susan Kent, Senate District 53. She's kind enough to take some time out of her day to talk with us about Senate details. Hi, Senator.
Good afternoon, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I wanted to let you know that you and I talked a while back when I was doing a hike over by Lake Elmo Park Preserve, which is near your district, I believe. It might even border your district.
Yep.
And we did the calendar for AM 950, and I did include a picture from your park in the calendar because it is such a pretty park.
Isn't it a great place? And if anybody likes cross-country skiing, especially given the weather, really nice place.
Oh, I imagine so. My goodness. They must have tons of trails out there.
They have very nice trails, and you just feel like you're so removed, but yet there you are pretty close to everything.
I want to start by asking you a question more about your district than what's going on in the Capitol to begin with, and that has to do with the rally that happened in St. Paul. That was organized apparently by Allie Waterby, who up until recently was listed as the chair for the Minnesota GOP for Senate District 53A. And so
right.
In your district, a person, I mean, that rally, if it's the right term to use, used a lot of rhetoric. There were threats. I mean, it was a scary addendum to what happened in Washington, D.C. Your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, once again, the person that organized this came out of your district.
Well, I mean, you know, regardless of where this individual came from, and I frankly learned about her through the media, like everybody else. But, you know, I mean, this rhetoric, it's just unacceptable. It is just so clear that, you know, it has been a strategic choice for a lot of Republicans, certainly for the past couple of months, but even longer, to really lie about our elections and all sorts of aspects of it. And it's not okay. And now it's persuaded people that, you know, something was wrong with this election when we know it wasn't. We know it was a absolutely fair and free election. And Vice President Biden will be fairly and duly inaugurated next week. But, you know, because people believed those lies somehow felt it was okay, they have really crossed some lines, whether it was the horrific insurrection we saw in Washington or just the demonstrations that we've seen locally and around the country.
Well, and reminder, that demonstration led the State Patrol to evacuate the governor's son from the governor's mansion out of fear they might try to do something. So it was there was more than just smoke there. As you talk about the rhetoric that's coming from the right, then we got to get to that forum then, because it must have just been, I mean, I know Governor Walz, I know Speaker Hortman, I imagine you are just the same way, to hear Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, once again bathe in this rhetoric that there's something there when there's nothing there. These are lies, but to keep going back to that well and presenting that as some sort of factual truth.
I keep being sort of amazed hearing a lot of different people talk about, oh, we shouldn't be divisive. And I don't want to be divisive in general. I think we should all listen to each other and respect each other and be able to have good dialogues and debates with honest disagreements. But yeah, you know, if somebody's going to be dealing in lies and I'm going to want to stand with the truth, I'm not going to jump to some of the other side of that line for them. You know, we need to stand for the truth. We need to stand for the reality. We need to stand for facts and science, whether we're talking about elections or whether we're talking about viruses. And we need to be honest with the people that we represent. And that is just a core part of the rule of law and our democracy.
Lies are not a counterpoint to a political argument. Lies are lies. And that's the unfortunate part, is that people are trying to present lies as a counterpoint. And no, the sun is bright. You can't say no, it's not, and that's a counterpoint. You're just a fool.
Right. Yeah. There's no both sides when one of the sides is lies. That's exactly right. And, you know, somewhere in this discourse, you know, we went from what was spin, right, where you put a positive look on some set of facts, to now just complete distortions. And we saw that through, you know, certainly through this campaign, but we see it repeatedly. This is not new. And the other thing is, you know, we've heard Senator Kiffmeyer, for example, keeps talking about, oh, this session we're going to talk about election security. Well, they're going to be pushing through more efforts to limit people's ability to cast their vote. You know, people who are absolutely eligible voters through different mechanisms, probably voter ID, who knows what else. When we know, if you pay attention to the fact, that voter fraud, as they like to call it, is almost non-existent. And so they'd rather, you know, err on the side of suppressing a whole bunch of votes. Maybe that's a strategy. I don't know. So that they can pursue this.
Well, and it is their strategy. I mean, the Republicans, the senators and the Congress people who signed on to that Paxton letter, whose entire argument is, we just don't like the fact that Joe Biden won Minnesota. We don't have any evidence of any fraud. We just want you to throw out all the legal votes in Minnesota and stall Trump as the winner there. I mean, that is some dystopian mindset right there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love when people point out we're going to critique the presidential part of these ballots, but the ones that elected us, we're good with, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
The parts where we got reelected. And I'll just say, you know, when you talk about highly interesting contests of the 2020 election, the Minnesota Senate was the number one target for an awful lot of people around the country to flip. And it did not. We came up short by one seat. So if there's anybody who, in theory, would have some justification to question it, it might be me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, because I recognize that the people of Minnesota spoke. We can have all sorts of conversations about the maps and the fact that, yes, DFL Senate candidates got about 100,000 more votes than Republican Senate candidates. But the way the maps are drawn, that means they got one more seat. And that's the reality. That's our system. We keep fighting. We keep putting our message out there. We try to make sure we have good redistricting that reflects where Minnesotans live. And we will keep, honestly, within our system, within our Constitution, that we all just swore an oath to just a week ago, are focused on doing it right.
Susan Kent's joining us, the Senate Minority Leader. Let's talk a little bit about the session that's coming in here. I mean, you mentioned redistricting. That's going to be on the table this year, or this session, I should say. And so, I know the House Democrats are not – we're going to see some changes here. I mean, there might be some changes on the national level. We might actually lose a congressional seat with the census. But, I mean, are we going to fix these gerrymandered maps?
Honestly, I don't think Minnesota's maps are that gerrymandered. Part of the challenge is the way the population has changed in 10 years. So, you know, there has been a real increase in population in the metro area and in some of our regional centers, and a decline in population in other areas. So the boundaries have stayed there. They're just not – the populations were equal at the time the lines were drawn, but it has shifted since then, and that's part of why that is the way it is.
I saw one Republican, a pundit more than anything else, suggesting that they should put St. Paul and Duluth in one district as a way to try to offset this and hold their Republican seats. If you fix some of the nuances with that, you know, whether gerrymandered or not, I think that that's going to give us a much more viable, map that's going to represent the state better. And as you mentioned, 100,000 more votes for Democratic senators. I think you're going to see the results in that reflected in the Senate as well.
I think so, too. And I also think this entire episode, and Matt, you know, I'm from New Orleans originally.
Yes.
So when Katrina happened and I watched all of that happen from here in Minnesota, upriver, worrying about my family and friends downriver, you know, I watched that give the lie to so much of the Bush administration. That's when people realized that they're lying about everything going on in New Orleans and with Katrina, what else are they lying about? Maybe Iraq, et cetera. And this is, I think, a similar moment that so many people, clearly, unfortunately, not everybody, but so many people are realizing, wait a minute, they were lying to us. And so if they're lying to us about this, because we all know your credibility is everything, and they also know that it wasn't just Donald Trump and the people closest to him, it was Republicans at all levels of government who found it politically expedient to perpetuate that lie and to further divide us and target DFLers with lies. That's just one of them. And so I think, there's a lot of waking up happening, and there will be more of it, because people will realize, wait, if they were lying to us about this, maybe they were lying to us about a virus and math. Mm-hmm.
As you look at the session, I mean, everything is still, I mean, obviously, as we're still looking at the transition of power that's happening on D.C., we are also looking at coronavirus here. Talk a little bit about some priorities with coronavirus and some of the other issues you're hoping to tackle in this Senate session here.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a budget session, so literally everything, we're looking at it. And I see it, it's sort of three parts. I mean, when we go in and we do this budget and get it passed, hopefully in May on a timely basis, that will cover the following 2 years. So we're really, we're budgeting for 2.5 years from now. So we're deep in the heart of this pandemic right now, and the whole crisis surrounding it, our kids and struggling with their schooling, our families struggling because they're having to supervise distance learning and juggle their jobs, and maybe they've lost jobs or lost income, never mind the literal healthcare challenges that are going on with all of this. And in addition to that, we have shown such a bright light on so many others that already existed here. And now we've exacerbated them even further. So, my focus and our caucus's focus as we look ahead to this session is to make sure that we're dealing with the urgent needs of COVID right now and the people of Minnesota and what they're facing. But that as we're looking ahead, that we are really helping put everybody in a position to be strong moving forward. That's about housing. That's about clean air and clean water. That's about dealing with the disparities with our education. That's broadband, not just across, to make sure somebody has access to some of the banks, but good broadband. And that helps in so many different ways. Healthcare. It's the basic issues that Minnesotans are facing. And we need to take this seriously because we have a real opportunity here. And the last thing I'll say about this is, the November forecast really showed, everybody was so pleasantly surprised to see that it wasn't as bad as we thought. That's because higher income folks really didn't pay a price. And they've continued spending money and generating sales tax and generating income tax. It's the lower income workers who have paid the price in this pandemic, blind workers. And we cannot balance this budget. We will have a deficit. We cannot balance this budget on the back of the people who are already struggling. And so we need, we'll have a lot that's going to happen between now and then. We're going to get our revised forecast, hopefully, thankfully, with the Democrats in charge in Congress and with President Biden and Vice President Harris, we'll be able to get good, meaningful relief to our schools, to our states, to our local governments, and won't have to make some of these drastic cuts, or we will also make sure that everybody's paying their fair share, because we know a lot of people have profited through this pandemic.
Well, yeah, that's the point. Yeah, I can't stand people giving tax cuts to the wealthy, and then when all of a sudden we get budget deficits, whether due to a crisis or just because of bad conservative economic policy, all of a sudden the people that have to pay that money back are the working class, and that needs to end, because they've done that for 30 years, and there's nothing left in the well for most workers in this country. They need to start either rescinding those tax cuts for the wealthy, or else, look at a better way of financing their situation, because, right, frankly, economic policy from conservatives stinks.
It doesn't. It clearly, you look at the numbers and income inequality and the relative distribution of wealth in our society, and 40 years of this, and it has failed.
Susan Kent is the Senate Minority Leader. Senator, thank you very much for the time. As always, you are welcome back on my show anytime. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Matt. Great talking to you. Thanks.
Take care. Susan Kent, kind enough to join us. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Senator Susan Kemp for joining us today. What was it that Trump said when, or he retweeted, when the looting starts, the shooting starts? Isn't that what he retweeted?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're looting the crud out of the White House, right? I'm going to just be honest. Hey, it's your retweet. Oh, wait, we can't see that anymore, can we? It was your retweet about the, if they start looting, they start the shooting. Apparently there are multiple things they're taking out that clearly are not theirs out of the White House. I mean, I'll tell you what, when he's out of office, you've got to, if he's taking stuff like the good silver and stuff like that, you know, or anything, he can take the French fry fryer out of the basement that he put in there. Oh, delicious French fries. I'm going to make you my new cabinet. Actually, he needs a new ice director, so maybe it will be Mayor McCheese. I shouldn't say anything, because in the slim chance he actually is listening to us, you know, I could see him, hey, whatever happened to Mayor McCheese? Whatever happened to that guy? Get him over here. Let's get him in charge of ice.
Not out of the realm of possibilities. I still remember you. I think I was producing back when he named William Barr the Attorney General, and you thought for a second it was Roseanne Barr.
Roseanne.
When you saw the headline on the TV,
he said Barr, new Attorney
yeah,
General.
Said Barr.
Like, Barr, new Attorney General. It's like Roseanne Barr's the new Attorney General.
But it's the same thing with Mayor McCheese. Would you really put it past him to do something as
I don't know. Vice President Grimace says yes.
I thought it was Grimace is more a Secretary of State kind of guy.
Well, he's Health and Human Services. You know, that's how it would be. That's why, I don't know if you remember this from a few years back, but the USDA recommended shake intake dramatically went up on that day. That was the Grimace was the Health and Human Services. It would explain a lot about why things have been bad, so bad with coronavirus. Speaking of coronavirus, the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. COVID-19, there's another 1,598 cases announced by state health officials, along with another 43 people have died in Minnesota. So far, 5,817 state residents have died in the pandemic, 64% of them long-term care, including 23 of the new deaths. So 23 of the 43 were members of long-term care facilities, but that means 20 weren't. A total of 153,332 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, including 15,082 who have now gotten a second shot, making them fully vaccinated. I have got good news as on my own front. I know someone whose daughter is now got the second vaccine. That's the first person by proxy within relationship, the first person I know that has gotten both doses of the vaccine. So thank you very much. That is a positive thing. I am glad to hear that. You Republicans, once again, Republicans, as you guys screaming about, we need more vaccine fast, don't yell at Tim Walz. You need to talk to the White House, because as Trump's stealing the Lincoln bust out of the White House and inciting terrorist mobs to attack the Capitol, he's kind of dropped the ball on everything else. So your frustration is with him. The state is on track to get a total of 558,300 doses by either Pfizer or Moderna vaccines by next week. Most of those are being sent through healthcare facilities or local public health agencies, but about 105,000 are reserved for nursing homes. There is a lag time in vaccine reporting, with most of the current information available, including 9,637 shots entered into the state's vaccine database as of Tuesday. Minnesota health officials are planning on a possible change to COVID-19 vaccine distribution, though, with the federal government announcing on Tuesday that states could broaden access to the shots to everyone age 65 and up. In Minnesota, that would expand the pool of those eligible to 2.2 million state residents. The federal government has yet to provide detailed guidance for the states, including how many doses will be allocated in the next few weeks. The inauguration of Joe Biden next week could also bring more changes in the federal COVID-19 vaccine policy, with new leadership in health agencies and pandemic advisors. Most people who are sick and experience mild symptoms, we already know that. They put that on in every version of the story. In Minnesota hospitals, 645 patients are getting care for COVID-19 complications, including 131 intensive care units. I believe that number, the 645, is up, but the 131 is down from the previous day. And the COVID-19 hospitalizations have fallen 70% since December 1st, a total of 36,678 test results reported. The right now, the nightmare zone is Arizona, California. It's just a mess out there. And it's also pretty bad in some of the southern states. We're not looking that bad, but, you know, I'm gonna once again say what is the obvious thing. Wear a mask. Socially distance. Don't get into large groups. Wash your freaking hands. Gosh, how many people have stopped doing that now like they should be doing? Wash your freaking hands. And I said this, and once again, it's great the governor is easing up regulations on restaurants and stuff. I'm not going into a restaurant. I'm not going to go eat in a restaurant. I'll get food to go, and I'll buy extra, and I'll get the gift card, and I'll buy the T-shirt, and I'll buy some for my neighbor. But I'm you know, it's until we have a large portion of this state vaccinated, I'm getting vaccinated, you know, which I'm not in any high group category. I'm going to be a while before I get there. Until that time, it's just kind of foolish for a person to go and risk it. And it's hard because I know a lot of people, and I know people who are smart and intelligent, and they're often, hey, here we are partying in the street in Miami. What are you doing? I don't know. Like I said, I know a lot of people are frustrated and they want this over. I don't blame you. I want this over. There are no good results. But at the end of the day, we do things to try to keep as many people alive as possible. That is the important thing. Keeping as many people alive as possible. And so, you know, once again, wear a mask, wash hands, socially distance, avoid large groups. And we'll get through this together. Hour two with Sven Sundgaard joining us next hour as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hour two of the show today. People saying that, will anyone be surprised if they take the light bulbs with them? I wouldn't. Please. Did you already see that he went after Rudy Giuliani? He's vowing to not pay Rudy Giuliani for his legal services. I mean, for all you people out there, and this is and when we had the one union guy where the union was kind of in, you know, that he's saying that there are members of the union that like Trump. Have you seen what he has done every time he deals with a union on building a building? And as a matter of fact, there are some jurisdictions he can't build any more buildings because he's so double-crossed the unions. And not paid what he's promised that they have forbid him from actually building in these communities. He would say, okay, we're going to pay you premium dollar, get your people here. They get the people there, and comes time for the check, he says, I'm not going to pay it. And then he says, here's the deal. I'm going to give you a one-tenth of what I promised you, so you're going to actually do it for, you know, you're going to end up losing money. Or we could tie this up in court, and you're not going to get your money anyway. And so that's kind of what he's done. And he just did this to Giuliani where he just basically said, I'm not going to pay his legal fees. And Giuliani's going to lose his law license pretty much everywhere.
That's a fight I love to see. Rudy Giuliani versus Trump. Let those guys brawl it out and court all they want.
Well, they're not going to. It's going to be like these other Republicans. And they're going to basically like, yeah, you tried to kill me, but I love you. I'm so terrified of the people that now inhabit our political party. I can't do the right thing anymore. I'm a Republican. I'm scared to death. By the way, coming up here at 5:30, who is our guest today?
Kevin Featherly, Capitol reporter for Minnesota Lawyer. We're going to be talking about the anticipated attack that could be happening on our state capitol this Sunday. Scary stuff. And then also interesting note about how trials are being delayed because no in-person court appearances are allowed anymore.
Wonder if that's going to be a backup. I didn't get a chance to talk to Susan Kent about that education story about the amount of kids failing classes now. But I mean, we're going to have some problems here that we're going to have to deal with. That's for sure. I want to get one. Speaking of problems, when a friend of mine said they were going to build the Southwest Light Rail line, he said to me, "This is a guy who knows history and he knows this stuff." He goes, mark my word, from the downtown till they get to the other side of the chain of lakes in Minneapolis, they're going to have problems because there's so much fill, dirt fill, that they put in there over the last 100 years, 120 years, to kind of flatten down land and fill in wetlands and stuff like this. People don't have any idea what they're going to be digging into. And what do you know? That exactly happened. That exactly happened. The opening of the $2 billion Southwest Light Rail Transit is going to be delayed as construction teams are dealing with poor soils, among other challenges. As that's the Kenilworth Tunnel.
Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the area where I think that they're going to have the worst problems there as they get through Lake of the Isles, Cedar Lake over that way, heading in towards Uptown. That's going to be a little bit of a problem. So Metropolitan Council on Thursday is not likely to meet the opening day projection of 2023, where it didn't say how long it would be delayed, but phrasing suggestions will be 2024 at the earliest. It has cited two reasons for the delay that emerged during the 2020 construction season, among them poor soils encountered in the Kenilworth Corridor in Minneapolis, as well as it began with the construction of the tunnel, and workers found poor soils that necessitate an alternative construction method, namely the introduction of secant walls to stabilize the soils. They also have to build another wall that is going to protect the light rail trains from some commercial train traffic in St. Louis Park or Bryn Mawr, now by the Bryn Mawr station. That's where that's at. So it's still coming. I mean, they're building like crazy. We have it right here by the radio station out in Eden Prairie at the Palatial Broadcasting Complex. I mean, it's a pretty impressive system they've built out here so far. But it does sound like it's going to be delayed. Like I said, I had a friend who knew it. He said, when they start digging out in the Kenilworth neighborhood, they're going to come across a mess, and they did. So we'll have to wait on that. Joining us right now, and this is just a treat for me because I'm a big fan of his. Sven Sundgaard is joining us, a meteorologist here in town. He's with bringmethenews.com. He's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit about the snowstorm that's coming through. Sven, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. It's an absolute. I'm a little fanny here. enjoy your weather forecast. I really appreciate the time. I'm going to just leave this here. I'll let you comment how you want to. I do appreciate your Twitter feed and some of the comments that you make politically. I do appreciate that.
Well, we are living in crazy times for sure. Where I'd like to think that things shouldn't be political. You know, like. Attempted coup, but you know, whatever. It's not my precise area of expertise. As far as the weather goes, I know a lot of people, just speaking of Twitter online, are wondering, oh, what's going on with this storm, right? Because you know, not much is happening. But
well, and I just looked outside. I mean, well, like I said, we're in Eden Prairie. It's not snowing right now. It snowed about like an inch, maybe 2 inches. But you had mentioned online earlier on Twitter that the snow seems to be melting fairly quickly right now as it hits the ground in Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Yeah, and that's kind of expected too. So, you know, when you're seeing totals, regardless of who they are coming from over the last day or so, you're never going to see that all at once, because we were going to get kind of this prolonged snowfall event kind of really in two waves. So the wave we got during the day today, you know, I was forecasting about an inch or two, and that's what we've gotten. It's just a little bit more than an inch. But yeah, if you're looking outside, you're kind of like, where is it? Well, it's not on any paved surface or sidewalk because it accumulated for a while and then melted. The best chance of trying to measure some of that is going to be on top of where snow already exists, where it can stay kind of cold. But we've been hovering just at or slightly above freezing all day, so that's why we've been seeing some of the melting. And that's why this isn't going to be one of those situations where it's a 15 or 20 to 1 snow to water ratio. This is going to be pretty even 10 to 1 or even less, because of the warm temperatures.
Is that like a March? That's like a spring storm, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely not normal for January. And a lot of people actually have been asking me as well about rain in January. Well, of course, it's not unheard of, but we've definitely been seeing more and more frequent midwinter rainfall events. And today actually is, and I had tweeted about this earlier, meteorological halfway point of winter, because we use even months just because it's easier for compiling statistics. So December 1st to February 28th is winter, and this is the exact halfway point. And we are running 6.5 degrees warmer than normal.
Wow.
Which if we kept this pace up, which we probably won't, I'm going to preface it by that. But if the second half of the winter were to be just the same as the first half, this would end up the eighth warmest winter on record of 147 years. And remember, you know, the Farmer's Almanac and all that, which I always lambast as a joke anyway. But case in point, you know, they're forecasting this cold, snowy winter. But even a lot of the official forecasts were kind of at or maybe slightly colder and snowier than normal. You know, everybody heard about La Nina. Well, you know, one of the things you've been seeing today, because the official numbers have come out that 2020 just about tied 2016 as the warmest year on record. We're behind by like, I think, 200ths of a degree or something absurd from 2016. Well, 2016 was an El Nino year, and that typically is a hot year for the planet. And the fact that this was not 2020 was not an El Nino year, and it came in almost as hot as 2016 globally is pretty incredible. And kind of all year I've been sort of telling people, you know, first of all, La Nina for us isn't a slam dunk as far as is it going to be a colder than normal winter, whereas El Nino winters, 3 out of 4 are warmer than normal. La Nina is like maybe 55% of them compared to 45% are colder than normal. So it's not a very strong correlation. And then to boot, I just tell people, keep in mind our winters and our planet are warmer than they used to be, period. Mm-hmm. So a weak La Nina or even a moderate La Nina is not going to be necessarily enough to overcome the fact that we've warmed up the planet so much, and especially our Arctic, which is where our winter weather comes from.
My dad was at the University of Minnesota, 48, 49, 50, 51. He said that not only did the school have rules that you could not go outside from Christmas to Valentine's Day, but they also had on campus, snowy owls would nest on campus, which I don't think there's a snowy owl south of the Iron Range now.
I've never seen one.
Yeah. It is my dad. I remember one of my last times that I was up north with my dad. We were in Bowabic, and he was looking out the window. It was December 16th. It was 35 degrees, raining, and half the ground, the snow had melted. And he said, he looked at me with this kind of scared look, because he was a lifelong northern Minnesotan. He goes, I've never seen anything like this. This is really weird.
Yeah, you know, and that's the consistent thing here is, you know, one of the things, you know, we have a new set of normals this year too, because we use 30-year normals. So what we've been using for 10 years is 1981 to 2010 mm-hmm. for when, you know, when we talk about average, what's the average high or the average for the month to try to keep up with the climate, you know? So keeping in mind that even when we say it's above normal, we're talking about for the last 30 years, which is going to be warmer than if we looked at the last 147 years, all of our records, because just it's getting warmer, period. So even as those 30 years shift. So we started a new group. Now it's 1991 to 2020 are the normals that we're using. And, you know, even for that, it's just the snowfall is actually, I think this would shock people, is increasing for a place like the Twin Cities. So our temperature, especially in the winter, is warming rapidly. In fact, winter is our fastest warming season, and Minnesota is one of the fastest warming states in the lower 48. And it is particularly in that winter period. But the thing that we're seeing is the snowfall is less dependable and less frequent. And if you look at snow cover, that's going down. So we're getting more snow because as the atmosphere warms up, it holds more water vapor, you get more powerful storms. So places like the East Coast also getting more snowfall when you look at bigger storms, but it's less dependable. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've been seeing that pretty frequently here in recent years. Yeah, you might get some good snow and then, you know, it's 50 degrees and raining at Christmas and it's gone. Yeah. So it's not the consistency. So as, you know, historically, Minnesota, this time of year, especially late January to February, usually is not that snowy. We just rely on clipper systems because it's just cold. You don't get the big storms with the Gulf moisture. So we're seeing more of those in midwinter. So that's actually pushing up our average snowfall, which seems kind of contradictory, but the temperatures are warm.
Well, my wife and I were talking the last 2 weeks. I mean, it's been actually a really nice January as far as we've been able to get out and hike around. January is supposed to be a pretty brutal month in this state. You're not supposed to be able to go for 2 mile hikes without having to get inside pretty quick.
No. And it always seems like New Year's Eve is 30 below zero, and go figure, the year that we can't go out and party to midnight is the year where it's mild. But yeah, no, January actually, so as I said, winter is 6.5 degrees above normal. January so far is running 8 degrees warmer than normal.
Wow.
So for these first 2 weeks, it's pretty incredible. But people are probably wondering about this storm.
I'm guessing
immediate concerns as well. And so, yeah, we're in a lull right now, but I was just looking that second round. This is where, and even this morning and last night, I said the bulk of our snow is going to come Thursday night. That's tonight. where we're going to get 2 to 4 inches overnight. Now, that is slightly less than what we were looking at maybe 12 to 24 hours ago. But still, it's going to accumulate overnight. Temperatures, though, the one thing I've been stressing too with this storm that benefits us if you're planning on traveling, especially in the metro area where we have lots of plows and lots of salt on the roads, temperatures are going to stay right around freezing. So roads probably will just be kind of slushy overnight at the worst. And then tomorrow it's going to be kind of a light snow through the day. So another inch or two of snow on top of 2 to 4 tonight. So we're looking at probably 4, 5, 6 inches of snow in total. But again, will you see all 6 or 4 inches of that at once? Probably going to get some kind of melting here before things finally start to drop as far as temperatures go Saturday. But we're not talking about any real brutal cold. We're talking about a return to the 20s, which is still slightly actually above normal into early next week. But if you want to go through my YouTube channel, when the weather was quiet earlier in the week and last week, I explained a little bit about, you know, there's been a lot of news about the polar vortex splitting, what that means. There are some signs that we might see some cold here finally at the end of the month, but it's by no means any kind of guarantee. But yeah, snowfall tonight, heaviest of it's going to be tonight for sure. So if you're going to be out driving around late tonight or early tomorrow morning before the sun's up, you might run into some slush covered roads. But especially western Minnesota, what we are going to see no matter what is the winds really pick up. Blizzard conditions off to the west, so just west of the Twin Cities, blizzard warnings. And remember, blizzard isn't about the amount of snow. It's about visibilities and wind speeds. And we're talking over 50 mile per hour wind gusts. So Kind of remember that pre-Christmas blizzard.
Yeah.
Conditions similar, not quite as severe in the western part of the state. We won't get blizzard conditions here. And the one thing, again, going for us in the city, besides the fact that all of the metro is one giant wind block, is that the temperatures, the snow will be that wet snow versus the dry snow. It doesn't blow around as much. But western Minnesota, the winds are just going to be so crazy that you're still going to have some visibility issues.
I want to encourage everyone here to follow Sven. You've got the YouTube channel, also bringmethenews.com, right?
Yep. Right. And I do both, and I put my videos out everywhere. So you can go wherever you want to find them.
And I will recommend polar vortex splitting video. I watched that. It's very informative. If you're not following him, catch him every day. He's got these forecasts. They're solid information. It's my pleasure. This is just great. Hey, Sven, come on back. Anytime you want to, you're more than welcome on my show, okay?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Sven Sundgaard, once again on YouTube and also at bringmeinthenews.com. Thanks, Sven. Thank you very much for the update.
Thank you. Drive safely, everyone.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Kathy Malone on Sven. I love him. Hey, he classed up this joint. Oh, thanks, Sven Sundgaard, joining us. We're going to spotlight that interview coming up here a little bit later on. And just be careful out there. And once again, as he said, it sounds like south of us, to the west of us, tough. Here, we're kind of in a nice little pocket, hopefully not too bad, but you'll get a little shoveling in over the next 2 days. Changing subjects dramatically here before we get to Kevin Featherly with Brett here in just a bit. Reminder to everyone out there, Ashley Babbitt is a traitor to the American people. She is a traitor to this country. She's a terrorist, and she got shot while she was trying to get at Congress people in the House. And so do not turn her into anything other than the traitor that she is. She is no better, in my mind, than the pilots that flew those planes on 9/11. She's no better than any enemy that we've ever faced. And you know me, I'm not a big fan of the Confederate South. She is just as bad as those people were. She is not a proud American. She is a traitor to American people. But speaking of traitors, we caught a few of them. Hey, the net is wide lately. Let's give us our update on Traitor Roundup. First up, the man who was photographed holding the Confederate battle flag in the U.S. Capitol last week during the riot was arrested on Thursday in Delaware, two law enforcement officials said. The man, Kevin Seyfried, S-E-E-F-R-I-E-D, wanted by the FBI, was sought to help public to identify him, widely circulated there. The bulletin, the agency said, was looking for assistance in identifying individuals who made unlawful entry into the Capitol. According to court documents, Seyfried and his son, Hunter Seyfried, were identified after the FBI received a report from a coworker of Hunter Seyfried, who said the man had bragged about being in the Capitol with his father on January 6th. Seyfried's son also charged. So we got two traitors down there in Delaware. Member of the New York Malta Zoning Board of Appeals has resigned after she was identified in photos showing her participating in the breaching of the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th. In her resignation letter, Sharon Panino said that she's handling in her resignation with regret but belief that these challenging times, it is important to allow for any impediment to smooth operation, shouldn't have any impediment to the smooth operation of town business. Photos show Panino sitting on the ground with a green jacket surrounded by police officers who are holding her arms. Another shows officers walking beside her as her arms are handcuffed behind her back. 55-year-old man from Chester, Pennsylvania, was caught on video hurling a fire extinguisher at police during the violence at the Capitol, has been arrested as well. Now, I want to make sure we identify. There were two cases of these Trump terrorists hitting law enforcement with a fire extinguisher. One led to the death of the police officer. This was not the one. This is a guy, he just basically lobs it, hits three officers in the head. They all look like, they looked like they had their helmets on, thank God. But he did do this. Robert Sanford, a retired firefighter, faces three felony charges, including assaulting a police officer. He was arrested in Pennsylvania Thursday morning. The video shows rioters engaging in the confrontation with a gaggle of police before Sanford hurls the fire extinguisher, striking the officers in the head. Sanford reportedly told a friend that he was the person seen in the photos. His friend then tipped off the feds and said Sanford, who traveled to D.C. by bus with a group of people, according to the Daily Beast. Ha ha. We're getting – all your buddies are turning you in. All your buddies are turning you on in. Many tips and analysis of footage has surfaced to the idea of militiamen and ex-U.S. Marine Donovan Crowell. He was among combat wear-wearing individuals moving in a line up the Capitol steps. Also, Christina Prioli, school therapist who stormed the Capitol to get to the VP's chair. She actually made it up into the Senate chamber. She quit her job the day after the riot saying, "I'll be switching paths to expose the global evil of human trafficking and pedophilia," according to government and child services agencies. She's actually going to be going to jail, and she's going to be going to prison because, well, yeah, she's a criminal. I refuse to allow these people to be described in anything other than traitors to America. I'm a veteran, U.S. Army. They have you swear you'll fight the enemies of America, both foreign and domestic. These were domestic terrorists. These were no better than the Confederates. They were no better than the people that flew planes into buildings on 9/11. These people hate America and wanted to destroy it because the only thing they did love is Donald Trump. And they would have killed Mike Pence. They would have killed. This is, I'm the one that's saying, for God's sakes, why are you people outraged about the vice president, the Republican vice president, being threatened? And it's not like we don't have that on tape. They would have killed Mike Pence. They would have killed Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. There seems to have been some kind of coordinated effort to go after the squad. They were going to kill any congressman. So once again, Hagedorn, Stauber, Emmer, Fischbach, as you voted to not impeach, you four clowns would have been murdered by this mob if they would have gotten their hands on you. They're traitors. They're anti-American traitors. They're terrorists. That's all they are. And I highly encourage you. There are some people right now online that are doing God's work. And they are posting these images, and they're saying, "Help identify these people." Some of these places, some of these online resources. My God, the police work they're doing is unbelievable. They're identifying earpieces and where you buy them, and what kind of shoes they've got, and they're figuring out tattoos, and they're cross-referencing that. It is really amazing. If you take a look at those images, please do look at those images. If you recognize anyone there, these are not your friends. These are enemies of the American people. You need to call the FBI immediately. All right? All right. 952-946-6205. Brett is up next with an interview. When we do a return with Kevin Featherly, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett taking over the Matt McNeil Show for one segment as Matt's going to be updating his social media, among some other things, for the next little while. But happy to be joined now by Kevin Featherly. He is the Capitol reporter for Minnesota Lawyer. You might remember him. I had him on my show every once in a while as he gives us some updates on what's happening at the state capitol and other Minnesota political news. As today, got a number of topics we'll be going through. And Kevin, good to have you back on.
Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it has certainly been a while. I do want to get into this this new proposal that was put through and I believe passed, talking about how we are going to have an extended moratorium on in-person trials. But first, we got to go through and talk a little bit about these capital attacks and what we saw in the response at the state capitol, because it sounds like the Speaker of the House, that would be DFLer Melissa Hortman, is going to be getting the BCA involved, investigating what happened to see if any of our Minnesota contingent were involved in last week's attack. So tell us about what you heard this morning from Speaker Hortman.
Well, this was actually, when was this? This would have been yesterday morning.
Gotcha.
I'd first heard about it on Tuesday morning. I talked to someone in her press office who I was asking about the matter and sort of in passing was told that the BCA was involved. And I'm like, whoa, what's this? So as I dug into it, I found out that she had, the way it worked out is she's concerned about both the statements that were made by the organizers, people who weren't elected officials, but who were participants, who really made some of the most inflammatory and threatening remarks. But she was also concerned about remarks, well, the presence of and the remarks made by six GOP House members. But she says that the information she has on what those members said is incomplete. She has a partial transcript. The available public video shows them speaking, but not saying anything, you know, way out of bounds from, you know, standard issue GOP grenade throwing rhetoric. Whereas some of the other people who were in that crowd were directly threatening the governor, directly threatening, I interpreted, the lives of district court judges, and including one in Ramsey County who made an election decision that they didn't like. Very disturbing stuff. And one of the members also, well, actually two of the members, talked about that judge and in their displeasure. One of them even threatened, apparently, I haven't seen video, but apparently threatened to have her impeached. So, I mean, there's a lot of concern there. She then approached John Choi, the Ramsey County attorney. He said, I don't make criminal referrals, sent her to John Harrington, and said yesterday that she had confirmation that the BCA is investigating that event. And she said, when I asked her directly, that part of what, in her understanding, will be probed is the members' involvement in that event. And whether or not, as she put it during a forum on January 11th with the press, whether or not they participated in, essentially domestic terrorism.
And this is pretty significant to be getting the BCA involved. I was as surprised as you when I was reading that on your Twitter feed that they're now involved in this investigation, because that certainly heightens the scrutiny that's going to be with what's going to be looked at this situation. And I'm sure there could be some charges that could possibly be filed.
Well, I tell you, though, my gut would tell me that if there are to be charges filed, they probably wouldn't be against legislators because, I mean, just based on what I've seen, and it's incomplete. I've only seen a 5-minute video segment and some other odds and ends here and there. I wasn't present. I didn't hear the legislators speaking directly. But I, from the available evidence that I've been able to glean, and it appears to kind of overlap with what the speaker has seen, I'm not seeing any really, really outrageous, insurrectionist remarks made by the lawmakers. For instance, Mary Franzen was there and she was talking about, the redistribution of wealth. And another guy was there, Glenn Grunhagen, who invoked the fact that, in his opinion, we're in the middle of a culture war. that's a little different from the guy who called for a civil war and said that it's time to cull through the weeds and gave a shout out to the Proud Boys.
So what?
So, you know, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
So I would wager that it's unlikely there will be charges against the lawmakers. Even Speaker Hortman yesterday said that, based on the available evidence she has now, she's more concerned about what the other folks said. And after all, those remarks, because some of the same, as I understand it, some of the same protesters went over to the governor's mansion. The governor said, he told reporters during a forum with the four leaders and himself on Monday, that, you know, they had to evacuate his kid out of the governor's residence because the threats had been so incendiary and direct toward him. And he said his 14-year-old son was in shock and crying and trying to find the dog while the state patrol was trying to usher him out to a safe location. Pretty intense stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What's been the response been from Kurt Daut over in the House of Representatives? How has he responded to this BCA investigation?
Well, I think he sort of responds in some, to some degree, a little bit the way I do, just in the sense that I haven't seen any evidence that the lawmakers were really engaged in the real insurrectionist stuff. I mean, you could question their remarks.
Yeah, essentially, the remarks were over the line, but maybe not necessarily rising to the point where they're going to be prosecuted necessarily by law enforcement. Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Right. And he even questions, she invoked the idea that, or, you know, she held up the idea that they could also be faced with ethics charges if, you know, it's deemed that they crossed the line. But he's, you know, what he told me in a written statement, I didn't get to talk to him, but he sent me an email that, you know, there is no evidence of inappropriate comments or actions. And if the speaker thinks there is, his quote to me was, it's time for her to bring that evidence forward or stop implying that there is anything that rose to a level of law enforcement or ethics committee referral.
Speaking with Kevin Featherly, he is the Capitol reporter for Minnesota Lawyer. Great resource to find out with what's happening at the Minnesota Capitol. MinnesotaLawyer.com is that website. I want to move on to another story that you've been working on, and this has to do with the Minnesota Judicial Council, because they recently extended their moratorium on most in-person trials through now March 15th. So just to back up a little bit, talk about some of the measures that have been taken with our criminal justice system when it comes to in-person trials, because as I'm sure you're going to explain, we haven't really been seeing a whole lot of those since COVID-19 has taken place.
No, indeed not. Well, there was a almost complete shutdown of the courts back in, I believe it was either April or May. It was very early in the pandemic. And over time, you know, they did pilot programs where they allowed some in-person jury trials in like five counties to see if it would work. And then they were gradually ramping it up from that point as over the summer and into the early fall, as it appeared that COVID was somewhat receding. But then in November, bam, we had this giant, you know, spike in cases and in deaths. And on November 20th, the council approved basically shut the courts down again. And there was a moratorium on in-person criminal jury trials. So in order to have one of those, which was still possible, you had to go through a pretty rigorous review process, and you had to get sign off from the, you know, a bunch of different people, including the Chief Justice. Well, that was in place until February 1st. And so, you know, have not had many jury trials. And we've had virtually no civil, no civil trials at all since the moratorium was imposed. They'd only had 10 civil trials after the restart. And so that's another area that, you know, that's still a problem. There's still an issue with civil trials. But on the criminal front, what they did today is they extended the moratorium, indeed, until March 15th. And that's longer than they even proposed. They had proposed a 30-day extension. But after discussion and amendment, they decided to add 15 days because some judges and administrators thought that would be too quick of a turnaround to be able to pivot quickly enough and start these trials. But in imposing this new rule, they did an interesting thing. They extended, they basically
said that this review process, they call it an exceptions process, the exception being that you would be allowed to have an in-person jury trial, criminal jury trial. That is still in place, but the way they worded their order, judges, the chief judges in the various judicial districts are required to grant the exception for cases involving in-person, in-custody, speedy trial requests, anything like that, felonies, non-felony person crimes, meaning, you know, crimes against persons, domestic assaults, those kinds of things, those will all presumptively be allowed to proceed to a jury trial or at least be scheduled for a jury trial. And that's important because by scheduling the jury trial, they start the process. And then, you know, for instance, if a prosecutor decides there's not enough evidence or they're having problems getting witnesses or if there's any other reason to just resolve the case, they can get these folks out of jail, you know, and they can get these speedy trial demands met because that's a constitutional issue. So in effect, though they've extended the moratorium, I think they have actually loosened restrictions and it will result in some, I don't know what number, but some additional criminal jury trial. So it's actually a move to sort of loosen things up, even though it's a moratorium extension, you know, ostensibly.
Yeah, and that's where I wanted to go with that, because certainly COVID has to make that right to a speedy trial very, very difficult when you're trying to hold all of these hearings virtually. So I imagine there probably were a lot of concerns being raised over the past few months about, well, the defendant's right to a speedy trial.
Indeed. And, you know, there's also the issue of being, you know, being in jail during an outbreak. That's a very problematic issue. And the county jails, many of them have done a great deal to sort of cull their ranks and get people out of custody. So, yeah, it is an issue. It's a big issue. It's a constitutional issue. And you know, they've begun to find a way to rectify it. Now, this moratorium does remain pretty strictly in place for things like, you know, child in need of protective services hearings or, you know, things like that, family law cases, stuff like that, civil cases generally. And they're going to try to do some, you know, they're going to have an exceptions process that perhaps allow at least more remote civil trials. But we'll see how that works out. I think there's some nuts and bolts that need to be twisted before they get that really right and figure out what they're going to actually do there.
So this moratorium goes through March 15th, and I think it's pretty obvious that the COVID-19 pandemic is not going to be gone by then. Have they made any plans on what they might be looking at beyond that date? Obviously, they probably don't have anything firmly in place yet, but what are they talking about in terms of what the judicial system could look like beyond March 15th?
Oh, they are. They absolutely are thinking long term and what the court system looks like afterwards. There's this panel within the Judicial Council called the Other Side Work Group that's been working on that for pretty much this entire year, you know, the 8 or 9 months since the pandemic began. Some of the things they're thinking about are, you know, the use of senior judges, bringing in retired judges, relying more on those folks to take care of some backlog. There is a pretty significant backlog, by the way, particularly among criminal trials. I mean, I think it was on the order of 47,000 cases that they're going to have to catch up on at some point as of January 1st. So, yeah, they're thinking about technology, whether, you know, some of the things they're wondering about is whether or not they're going to continue to allow the public to attend remotely on the long term, what kind of cases they'd allow that for. Are they actually going to allow that? That kind of collides with the court's customary sort of allergy to cameras in the courtroom. But they also realize it makes it a lot easier for both participants and attorneys. You know, like Ron Latz was talking in the Judiciary Committee hearing, he's a senator, DFL from St. Louis Park. He was talking the other day about how the pandemic has actually made his life easier and made him much more efficient lawyer because he can do a remote hearing in Redwood Falls without having to even get in his car. Whereas, in the course of the day, take care of 3 or 4 different matters at trial without having to spend the entire day traveling all the way across the state and all the way back for what might have turned out to be a 15-minute hearing. That's the kind of thing that lawyers wind up facing all the time. So, yes, they are absolutely thinking about what's next, and they're making plans.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if some of these measures, yeah, could permanently be adopted even after we're through this pandemic.
Hey, it's pretty clear that there's a taste for that. There's an appetite for some of that.
That's Kevin Featherly. He is the Capitol staff writer for Minnesota Lawyer. That website is minnlawyer.com. You can also follow Kevin over on Twitter at Kevin Featherly. Hey, Kevin, as always, good to check in with you, and we'll have to do this again in the next little while.
Yeah, let's just thank you.
Absolutely. We'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Nice job there, Brett, with Kevin. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Good news, breaking news. There's a guy that's been tagged the caveman or caveman, hashtag caveman on social media. He's the guy who is seen beating the cop with the American flag. That guy. They've caught him. Yeah, this is good to hear here. Apparently, Arkansas man is charged, caught in video beating a police officer with the American flag as the Capitol riot was charged on Thursday with obstructing law enforcement officer as federal authorities escalated their efforts on Thursday to target the more brazen violent conduct. The man identified in court documents as Peter Steger, traitor to America. Traitor to America is my ad. Allegedly partook in the riot and assaulted the officer from Washington, D.C. Police Department. The officer was guarding an entrance to the U.S. Capitol after 4 p.m. Apparently his defense is, I thought I was beating a member of Antifa. Now, there's one side of which is clearly he's lying. I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing. But does he think that beating another human being with a flagpole is it was that guy? Okay, spill blood, my friend. No, I mean, not exactly the smartest whip on the tree, is he?
You know, stupidest defense.
Wow.
I was attempting to murder it, but it wasn't who I thought it was. There you go.
I want Bullhorn Woman arrested. Have you seen her? She was the one she's clearly up. There's something going on there. She knew stuff about the Capitol. I want her arrested. I want that traitor thrown into jail, too. Mm-hmm. Law enforcement prepares for potentially violent protests across the country this weekend. There are two events scheduled for the Minnesota State Capitol Complex, Freedom Fest and the Sunday church service. Both events are hosted by the same group that organized the Storm the Capitol rally in St. Paul on January 6th, according to the Minnesota Department of Administration's calendar and the approved permit applications for the events obtained by Bring Me the News. An estimated 150 people are expected to attend Freedom Fest from noon until 2 on Saturday on the upper mall of the state capitol complex, with the program slated to feature gathering, talking, praying, potentially singing if things are going well, says host Becky Strohmeyer, wrote on the permit application, which has been approved. Saturday's event is also being promoted on Facebook by Hold the Line Minnesota Group. Strohmeyer is among the founders of that group. Okay, to the State Patrol and the National Guard guys who are going to be defending the Capitol, make sure you lock and load, all right? Make sure you lock and load. You know, traitors don't, you know, I understand you want to be careful here, but if they make a move for that capital, you know, it looks like it's an attempt to take over. And by all means, watch out on all the buildings. I mean, when you find out that the people there were scouting locations to blow up buildings and try to bring police away from the Capitol, yeah, watch out. On Sunday from 11 until 3, Strohmeyer organized a Sunday church service that will feature a small group gathering to pray for our elected officials. Okay, you know, it's 4 hours outdoors in January, and you're going to be praying. All right, I pray you don't get frostbite. They're going to be on the upper mall with 20 people estimated in attending, the approval permit says. The event isn't being promoted on Hold the Line Minnesota Facebook page, and the group is warning people not to attend any events at the state capitol on Sunday, saying in a January 11th Facebook post, this is an infiltration and setup tactic used to incite violence and blame us. No, you guys, you seem to, you know, your organizations that stormed the U.S. Capitol, they did that themselves. Strohmeyer told the Star Tribune Sunday's event is her hosting a few friends in an effort to curb any violent activity, adding, that being said, it's an invite-only, lawfully permitted event, and anyone trying to disturb that will be dealt with according to State Patrol policy. I didn't realize the State Patrol was running a door with invitations out there. Hold the Line Minnesota has organized, and by the way, it should be mentioned, you know, as they try to, you know, wrap this stuff in, it's a church service. Jesus! Who's that priest out in Alexandria that basically, you know, is talking about how he's ready to start, you know, martial law and gunning people down if he needs to because he's got his AR-15 and black robes. I don't know who. I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember the story completely. But, yeah, don't. I've seen your version of religion. Jesus is like, whoa, I'm not involved in that. Your Bible doesn't have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in it. It's all Leviticus, just FYI. Maybe it's a little bit of Revelations in there, but, you know, it's all Leviticus for the most part. Hold the Line is organized Stop the Steal events at the state capitol and the governor's residence in St. Paul on Saturday since President Trump lost the election. It also organized the January 6th Storm the Capitol rally, which was peaceful but did feature speakers who were calling for violence, civil war, and casualties. Jesus! The rhetoric used was apparently so threatening that the Minnesota State Patrol, for the first time in history, went into the governor's residence, removed the walls, his 14-year-old son to a safe place where he was crying, wondering where his dog was. Wall said during a virtual event hosted by the Forum News Service on Monday, St. Paul PD is expected and ready for the expected and unexpected. The planned gathering at the state capitol this weekend, which organizers say will be peaceful, We'll be peaceful. We're just going to be calling for killing and gutting all the cops. That's all we're going to be doing. That's all. It's going to be peaceful. Paraphrasing, guessing, taking a wild guess in the dark. The planned gatherings at the state capitol this weekend, organizers say, will be peaceful among concerns that demonstrators in Minnesota and elsewhere across the country ahead for Joe Biden's inauguration on January 20th could turn violent. The FBI has received credible threats of right-wing anti-government violence, including from the Boogaloo Boys, who being planned at the Minnesota State Capitol on Sunday. It's also been reported the FBI memo warned armed protests are being planned in all 50 state capitals between January 16th and 20th. I don't know. Are these two events tied to that? I don't know. I'm not sure. Can't say. We'll have to find out. But I will say this. I wouldn't be trusting anyone with these organizations. I think at this point, the gig is up. We can see what some of these people are wanting to try to do. And traitors to America, they kind of are going to deserve what they get. They're going to deserve what they get. Don't be a traitor. God bless the USA. We're back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.